On Sunday, March 19th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl honors Women Who Solo by recognizing flutist, composer, bandleader, and educator Nicole Mitchell. Join us as we discuss Nicole Mitchell's involvement with the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians, AACM, and various projects. That's Sunday, March 19th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. So funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl, I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is flutist, composer, band leader, and educator, Nicole Mitchell. Stay tuned for a very enlightening and hopefully enjoyable program. We're going to open the program with Faye Victor, who will be with Nicole Mitchell at National Sawdust on March 29th. Faye is going to share some thoughts about Faye Victor had written a piece titled Jazz Woman Me, and I asked her to make it available to share it with you. So thank you, Faye Victor. You can find out more about this recording at fayevictor.com. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. My bowl.
Jazz Woman Me. To be a woman in jazz when you want to be more or other than a standard singer or a pianist. To be a woman in jazz and not constantly define yourself as such. To be a woman in jazz with creative concepts that are accepted. To be a woman in jazz and be met on the bandstand as an equal is a rare deal. To be a woman in jazz is to live among men that demand you pass their bar of entry. Not all, but many. To be a woman in jazz as a vocalist of original and creative music is to be given the gaze of suspicion from black and white male musicians. If I hear anyone ask me to sing pretty one more time. To be a woman in jazz with a mind of your own is problematic. Our point of view isn't as valued unless it's seen as female. How many women band leaders lead festivals? How many female band leaders end up in critics' polls? Jazz history reveals beneath the surface the place of women. Applause, applause for those that don't rock the philosophical boat, and quiet for those who do. It took vocalist, composer, bandleader Betty Carter over 30 years to garner mainstream jazz acceptance, and no one could argue her chops. No one could argue her chops. If she didn't take her career into her own hands, we may have still been listening to her sides with Ray Charles. If Betty Carter was male with a trumpet making them same sounds, this is real. Jazz can feel like men want it all to themselves, an intellectual club that women aren't privy to. We can't handle it. I've always said, no way. Many other women have said the same. But I can't ignore the isolation I sometimes feel when my work is seen as less than. I hear what's out there and I know it's not. I've worked hard to develop my own voice. I've done my jazz work deeply. I sound like no one else. Being a vocalist is an asset as an improviser. I can make my message as direct or as abstract as I want it to be. That is power. I knew this was a hard road. A woman, non-instrumentalist, composing original music for my voice with improvising at the core, because I love the freedom to take long solos as much as I love hearing them. To be a woman in jazz is to question yourself. Difficult to find mentors. I've never had a vocal mentor, but I'm extremely fortunate. I had two important pianists take me very seriously. The great Misha Mengelberg was one of them, the great Curtis Clark the other. They both in their way informed me to ignore the haters and keep working toward my voice. There's something important there. They both value the voice as an important instrument in and of itself that was vital to this music. These are the beautiful exceptions in my world. To be a woman in jazz is to be as strong as granite. To be a fighter, an orator, a storyteller, a misogynist smeller, a defender of your right to be right there, going to battle with attitudes that won't budge. Doors slammed shut. To be a woman in jazz is to know the sensual and intellectual rigor of this music and know there is no need for mutual exclusivity. To be a woman in jazz is a spiritual and creative experience like no other, because all the fights and challenges make us stronger, entrench us deeper in the reasons we are here. So when we get on stage, it's clear. We aim to kill because we know we can. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Nicole Mitchell.
Nicole Mitchell, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I'm so glad you availed yourself to speak.
Thanks for inviting me, and I love the title of your show. We need more of that, right?
That's for sure. We use the Nina Simone version as our theme, so yay. And I actually owe you a photo of you, Amina Claudine Myers, and Jerry Allen.
Oh, yeah, I would love to see that.
From last year's Vision when you were there during the Henry Grimes tribute.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You've been at Vision for quite some time. How did you wind up doing things there?
You know, I think that my mentor, Fred Anderson, had a lot to do with that.
Okay.
Fred Anderson is a tenor saxophonist and band leader, composer, and also veteran ACM member and owner of the Velvet Lounge, which was really a mecca for African-American experimental music in Chicago for many years before he passed on.
Thank you.
really pretty sure that he had something to do with me getting connected with playing the Vision Festival, because they really revered him, and he played often in New York with the Vision Festival, as well as Hameed Drake.
The drummer.
Yeah, Hameed Drake. Yeah, also he played with Fred all the time, and he's very good friends and performs a lot with William Parker. They have lots of projects together, and I think Hameed plays every single year.
Practically.
Between those two, I'm sure that's probably how I was invited to be a part of that family.
You became a member of the Advancement for the Association of Creative Musicians, AACM, in 1995. How did that become official?
Yeah, that's right. The Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians, I just like to always give a little blurb of what it is in case somebody listening doesn't know.
Thank you.
But it's the Southside Chicago Collective of Musicians. It started back in 1965, where musicians wanted a platform to be able to support each other in creating original music with no limits. Mm-hmm. And this meant creating performance venues, it meant having education projects for the community, as well as having opportunities to share the music internationally. And so as a collective, it survived over 50 years. And yes, I became a member in 95. And that was very much through the sisterhood and mentorship of Maia, a multi-instrumentalist who plays harp, flute, cello, percussion.
Wow.
She's a vocalist and also did a lot of work in choreography and has, I think, a degree in visual art.
Okay.
And when I first moved to Chicago in 1990, I was playing on the streets downtown on, I think, Wabash and Jackson. And I think that's where I met her, not far from the Art Institute of Chicago, where she was taking classes. And we hooked up, started playing flute duets, and then both of us wanted to start an all-women's ensemble. She brought in one of her close friends, who also is a multi-instrumentalist, Shanta Nurula, and then Maia was a member of the ACM, and she brought both Shanta and myself into the organization through her support and the support of Ann Ward, who is another great woman in the ACM, who the pianist and vocalist, really great improviser, really great spirit, and really carried the ACM Music School for many, many years. And we lost her last year, so she's gone now. But that's how I got in.
You're mentioning the sisterhood last year as a result of the celebration of the 50th year of the AACM, Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians. I had wanted to do the women of AACM. And as I'm talking to you, you seem to have a lot of information about these women. You want to tell us a little bit more about the involvement of women in the AACM?
Sure. Actually, last December, I hosted a festival for Black women in creative music in Chicago that featured some of the women of the ACM. I wasn't able to get everyone there.
Sure.
But some of the newer members, I think, are even less known maybe to the public. Maybe their art is more known, but maybe not their association with the ACM. For example, Renee Baker is a violinist, composer. She has her own orchestra.
Wow.
So she composes prolifically, and she has performed probably hundreds, maybe even up to 1,000 of her own compositions, as well as playing the music of other living composers, is what she celebrates with her Chicago Modern Orchestra project, where she's also mentoring many Black musicians that maybe have a classical background, but mentoring them into improvisation. But it's a very diverse orchestra, definitely a multicultural group of musicians, and they perform all throughout the city of Chicago. And she's also doing a lot of film scoring. She started scoring Black and white films, starting with Oscar Micheaux's Body and Soul, which was his very first film.
Yeah.
And he's one of our oldest Black filmmakers. This was Paul Robeson's very first screening as an actor. And so she scored that film and has done several others and is traveling internationally performing her film score.
Wow.
And people don't know that she's an ACM member. You know, she's one of our newer members. Tamika Reed is really hot on the scene right now as a cellist. She's performing a lot in New York.
Yes, she is.
She spent a lot of time in Chicago working with Dee Alexander, who's another woman member of the ACM, who is like a stellar vocalist. Tamika has a new project, just came out last year, quartet with Mary Halverson.
Mm.
It's been doing really well, and I think she's playing Symphony Center in Chicago this year. in 2017 and, you know, has been touring internationally with her new project. And then we have Coco Ulysses and Jovia Armstrong that are both percussionists in Chicago and have their own projects. They were featured in the Voices Heard Black Women in Creative Music Festival. So those are just a few names, you know, and a little bit of what some of these women are doing. Yeah, there's a lot of activity, a lot of innovation, and there's still more to discover and more to develop.
Thank you.
am glad that in your mentioning the women participating as members of AACM, you mentioned the newer members, like yourself. Mm-hmm. Technically, I guess you're considered a newer member, having joined in 95 and everybody else having joined in the, you know, late, you know, in the 70s or 60s or
right.
whatever. So
some of the ones I mentioned came in 2005.
Right.
And also, you know, some of the members like Monque and Dosi and Jovia Armstrong. Monque is the vocalist who is one of very few African-American vocalists that really do experimental improvisation in terms of how she approaches creating her own improvisational language. She's performed on both of my Octavia Butler projects, but they came in 2015. So they're really new. That makes me very much an old member. And I'm
right.
a former president.
Exactly.
I'm the former woman president of the organization. The present president is Ernest Dawkins right now. Yeah.
Excellent. You were the first woman president of AACM, from what I've read.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I held it down for a few years.
That's a lot of work. But I've also noticed when I discuss the difference between Chicago and New York, the Chicago branch, the original, mm-hmm. is still operating out of getting new members. As opposed to New York, from what I understand, they're not really into getting new members. They're more just trying to create opportunities to play.
To continue the legacy, yeah.
Right.
With the current membership.
Yeah, but I'm
that's
really...
That's true. I mean, Chicago's the root, and so as the root, it's also the doorway where new membership comes through. So I guess that Chicago experience has really been essential to membership and the activities of the Chicago chapter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an activities of multi-generational work musically and philosophically, and that kind of experience has been really core to the development of new membership. So I can't answer for New York, but this is my theory on why Chicago maintains that responsibility of bringing in new members, and the New York chapter is really like a branch, but not the root of the tree.
Got it. I like the way you said that. When I spoke to Phil Curran, he pretty much indicated that that was the difference between the two chapters.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned Tamika Reed, and mm-hmm. I just want to acknowledge an event that you have at the end of the month here in New York at
the National
Sawdust. It is a stone commissioning series, your work Maroon Cloud. You want to tell us about first the stone commissioning series and then your your work that you're going to perform there?
Yes, I'm very honored to be included in, you know, it's a very in-depth series that's been created by John Zorn supporting the commissioning of new music. And all of these presentations will be premiered at National Sawdust. So I'm just one of many. My performance is on March 29th.
Right.
And National Sawdust is a really great venue in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I was working on this creative text called What Was Feared Lost, and I decided that I wanted that to be the focal point of the music that I would present for this project. I wouldn't mind reading you the little blurb that I wrote, if you don't mind.
Please, I was going to read it if you didn't.
Okay. Maroon Cloud, that warm, dark realness, was a doorway between worlds, and she visited often. This is where all the sound, dreams, and ideas live, a cloud dark purple space where forms emerge from formlessness, some familiar, some new. In this space of memory, of future, she found an alignment between those that are remembered and those that are forgotten. They would appear and dissolve into patterns, and sometimes plants or caverns. This new awareness, this realm of making, dark maroon cloud, it's a hidden choice that we all have, but it's been so lied about and covered up with opaque abuses and accusations, it's hard to find. In truth, it's a birthright to our species, perhaps the most important one, a gift directly from the blue marble that we all depend on. And now, like sight, the vision behind one's closed eyes to the maroon clouds of otherness is a mine of our mind, where we can excavate new designs of sound, paper, ink, words, and no one can stop us.
Hear, hear. And that is from your piece, What Was Feared Lost.
Yeah, and the piece actually hasn't been published yet, but it will come out on the next Arcana book, Musicians on Creative Music, which is a John Zorn volume. He has several volumes of this collection, all written by musicians. They can basically say whatever they want to say as long as it's focused on music. And so it was something that I really wanted to find my way in terms of how I want to approach writing. It's not scholarly writing. It's not academic writing. It's not quite poetry either, because actually the piece focuses on real events. So it actually is nonfiction, but the way it's written is a little bit curvy. So, yeah, I'm really curious to see how people will respond. It's a collection of the past and future all mixed into the present.
Folks who will be joining you will be, I always mess up his name, Arwan Ortiz?
Yeah, Arwan Ortiz on Arwan piano. Ortiz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Faye Victor on vocals.
Faye Victor on vocals, yeah.
Tamika Reed on cello, who you mentioned earlier.
Right.
And yourself, flutes, composition, and
yeah.
Electronics. Electronics.
And no drums.
No! Okay, let me just tell you, I play percussion, and it always, huh? No drums? How are they going to do this? No drums! So, is the piano and the electronics going to substitute or mask itself as drums, or the cello? Is everyone going to become percussive, or what?
Yes, I think that every instrument can be percussive. Mm. Potentially, every instrument has the ability to be percussive. So, mm-hmm. Yes, rhythmical information will definitely be present.
Okay, then.
and I love the challenge. I love challenging myself with different configurations that are not expected.
Uh-huh.
And finding ways to be fluid and ways for people to have the experience and not feel like something was missed. I actually just did a quartet with Billy Childs on piano,
oh.
Mark Dresser on bass,
uh-huh.
and Dwight Tribble, amazing vocalist in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah. And me on flute and right. no drums, and I was really happy with it. You know, I'd like to do that again.
You're not like anti-drum or anything like that. This is you
oh,
just
not
experiment.
At all. I do lots of stuff. Sometimes I have
I know. I notice. As a matter of fact, that is something that I've noticed about your compositions. It does have a percussive feel. Several of the compositions I've heard, I guess for the most part, the ones that you've done under the project of Black Earth Ensemble,
uh-huh.
a lot of that seems to be very percussive and Afrocentric and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say also like Sonic Projections,
yes.
the work I did with Craig Taborn and Chad Taylor
yes.
and David Boykin. I mean, how are you not going to be percussive with Chad Taylor?
Yeah, hello.
yeah.
Actually, that hasn't been recorded yet, right?
Yeah, I have two records
oh.
on Rogue Art. One of them is called The Secret Escapades of Velvet Anderson, which is kind of like romantic comedy suite mm-hmm. on Fred Anderson, the saxophonist that uh-huh. I brought up earlier.
Right, right.
And then the first one was called Emerald Hills.
Oh, yes.
Emerald Hills.
I am looking at it now. Okay.
Yeah.
What you performed at the Vision Festival, I remember you're introducing it as a sort of blaxploitation superhero.
Yeah, that was the Velvet Anderson.
Okay, that's
yeah,
what I
that's
thought. Thank you.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, that was wonderful. That was a great trip. I really enjoyed that. That was a nice journey. So it's good to know that that's recorded.
Yeah. We haven't performed it live very often, but hopefully people enjoy the record.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of the program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is flutist, composer, band leader, and educator, Nicole Mitchell. What you're listening to right now is Episodes of an Obscure Life from Nicole Mitchell's Black Earth Ensemble. That's sort of her primary band. This is from her debut release as a leader, Vision Quest. 2001 Dreamtime Records release. That's Nicole Mitchell on flute, flutophone, and compositions, Savoir Faire on violin, Edith Yokley on violin, Darius Savage on bass, former Sugar guest Hamid Drake on percussion, Avrinal Ra on percussion as well. Before that, we heard The Heroic Rescue from Nicole Mitchell's Sonic Projections project, The Secret Escapades of Velvet Anderson. This is a 2013 Rogue Art release. And before that, we heard Real Blue from Maya. The plan was to only play recordings by Nicole Mitchell, but I felt that I had to play this one because the multi-instrumentalist Maya was Nicole Mitchell's introduction to the AACM, the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians. This is a 2001 Orchard Records release, and Nicole Mitchell is featured as Nikki Mitchell on flute and vocals on this release. Before that, we heard Anderson's Plan, also from The Secret Escapades of Velvet Anderson. Before that, we heard Yearning from Nicole Mitchell's Ice Crystals. Aquarius is the name of this release. This is a 2013 Delmark Records release. Nicole Mitchell on flute, Jason Adasewicz, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, on vibraphone, Joshua Abrams on bass, Frank Rossley on drums. Before that, as mentioned, opened the program with Faye Victor reading her piece, Jazz Woman Me. And Faye is accompanied by her husband on bass, Joachim Van Dyke. And our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. This is from the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. This is an RCA BMG compilation originally recorded in 1967. This compilation was released in 1998. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams. There'll be more with Nicole Mitchell here on Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for March 19th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar in My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And this week's show features flutist Nicole Mitchell. She'll be at National Sawdust in Brooklyn on March 29th. And we have other listings for you this week. We start with saxophonist Gary Bartz, who's at the Blue Note on March 20th, with pianist McCoy Tyner, saxophonist Oliver Lake, bassist Reggie Workman, drummer Andrew Surreal, and pianist Mark Carey are at the Village Vanguard as Trio 3 Plus 1 from the 21st through the 26th. WBGO radio hosts Sheila Anderson and Rhonda Hamilton are at Rutgers University Newark's Institute for Jazz Studies on the 24th and 25th for a conference on the life and legacy of Ella Fitzgerald, and admission to that is free. Blues vocalist Alexis P. Suter is at Darrell's House in Pawling, New York with Ministers of Sound on the 26th. Looking a little further ahead, trombonist and C-cellist Steve Turay is at Aaron Davis Hall on the City College of New York's Harlem campus on the 31st with Elio Villafranca. Harpist Brandy Younger is at Newark, New Jersey's Bethany Baptist Church on April 1st. Bassist Christian McBride leads a big band at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club from the 4th through 9th and returns with the New John Quintet from the 11th through 16th. Saxophonist Lakeisha Benjamin is at Newark's Gateway Center for a free lunchtime concert on April 5th. Pianist Randy Weston leads the African Rhythms Quintet with Alex Blake on bass at the Jazz Standard from the 6th through 9th, and Howard Johnson joins them as a special guest on tuba on the 7th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on our website. And if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. If you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the support WBAI link on our website. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our biweekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, April 2nd. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
This is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
on the subject of recordings.
Sure.
Since we are talking about it, Rogue Art. I love the label. I love the work that they do. And I love the fact that you've been active with them for quite some time now. There's one thing they don't do is offer digital downloads. Is there, do you know where there's
I know.
Is there a reason for that?
Basically, they have this fidelity stance that MP3s are just low quality.
Right.
And I'm trying to get them actually to move over to Bandcamp because Bandcamp offers the possibility of having high fidelity digital music.
Right.
And so if that's the issue, put it on Bandcamp and sell it on Bandcamp and then everybody can get it because some people don't even have CD players anymore.
That is true.
You know, and these new computers don't have CD drives and they haven't for a while.
Right.
And people are going back to LP and they do sell LPs.
Mm-hmm.
But the other problem is being in France, you know, people want to be able to access the material and they don't want to pay for shipping from Paris.
Right.
You know?
Right. And also for me, since I'm on the air, it's a time sensitive thing.
You could do it today. Like you
exactly.
could download it right while we're talking
exactly.
and play it in 5 minutes.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's it. But not from Rogue Art. No, not from Rogue Art. So I hope they change their mind. And
I think they could make some more money. If
they most
do that.
Certainly could.
Yeah. That,
that's what I'm saying. Hint, hint. And you mentioned Renee Baker earlier. She's on your Arc of O recording.
Yes.
That's
yes.
with, what is, how is that? Is that Arc New Music Ensemble?
Arc, like anarchy.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh,
It's a new music ensemble from Poland, from Poznan. Yeah.
Could you tell us about that? Because since it's from Poland, it has all of these musicians with K's or I's at the end of their name, and I can't pronounce them. But what motivated the piece? It's a really dynamic piece, though.
Oh, thanks. Actually, that piece, wow, there's like a Wikipedia story about Archivo. I had no idea. Archivo, it was a commission for the Chicago Jazz Festival in 2010.
Uh-huh.
And so the first premiere was actually in Chicago at the Millennium Park stage. I think it's called the Pritzker stage. Mm-hmm. And it was a double ensemble with, I think it was Craig Taborn, Anthony Davis, mm-hmm. and a lot of musicians from Black Earth Ensemble. And that was the premiere of the piece. And then I had the opportunity very soon after that to do it in Poznan, because the Jazz Institute, Lauren Deutsch, has been really amazing. She's the executive director of the Jazz Institute in Chicago, but she's been really amazing in programming jazz throughout the city of Chicago, but also formed this partnership with an organization in Poznan where there's a festival called Made in Chicago that's been going on since 2006, bringing Chicago musicians to Poland, because I think the second biggest city in Poland is actually Chicago.
Oh, wow.
in terms of population. But there's a real incredible love for jazz in Poland because it was banned during Hitler's regime. Because Hitler had taken over Poland.
Right.
And basically was forcing his views and his ways on the country, and one of the things was that jazz was considered not acceptable, and it was actually illegal.
Right, it was degenerate.
Yeah, degenerate.
Right.
Yeah, and it was black people's music, and we didn't like black people.
Exactly.
So Poland is one of those places where they revere jazz music very much, and there's a lot of great musicians there, and they also love to hear Chicago jazz.
Nice.
So I had the opportunity to do Archivo. And it was funny because it was very experimental in relation to the other work that I had done there previously. So the audience was a little bit stunned, like, this is like Rite of Spring in jazz or something, you know. But it was really a lot of fun. And over time, musicians even come back to me and say, well, we had such a great time doing that piece. It really came together and was really a special moment for me also as a composer to be able to work with such a great ensemble and to really be able to get the music out, to get it played the way I wanted it to be played, and to also have Chicago improvisers there like David Boykin, Watts Abode, and Renee Baker to help to shape the piece. So it was just really amazing. But you know, Renee is on the new album that's coming out very soon, the Mandorla Awakening. Yeah.
You're actually going to have a release for that, aren't you?
Yeah, that'll be released, I think, in May or next, so very soon.
Okay.
And Mandorla Awakening, it has a very special instrumentation. It's a mixture of like urban sounds and country sounds.
Oh.
So you have like vulnerable instruments like shakuhachi flute.
Oh, wow.
And shamisen, which is like a Japanese, almost like a little guitar. And then you also have oud.
Oh.
And then you have vocals. Then you have electric guitar and you have percussion.
Wow.
And you have bass and violin, cello, flute. So that piece, I'm really excited about that being released because it's kind of my statement about the times we're in now and this idea of how do we emerge from all of this dystopic stuff? How can we embrace some of the strengths from earth-based culture, the eco-sustainable ways of being where humanity actually was in tune with nature, and be able to bring that along with this idea of technology and quote-unquote advancement, and like find a way to actually advance human interaction, because we have not got there yet.
Who's participating? What musicians have you chosen?
I have Ko Umuzaki. He's playing shakuhachi. He actually performs a lot with the Silk Road Ensemble with Yo-Yo Ma, so it's a real honor to have him. Tatsu Aoki, who is a real community leader in jazz in Chicago. He has a Taiko Legacy program where he's teaching lots of young people about the Japanese tradition of Taiko.
Wow.
But he also brings in experimental elements and like pushes innovation with the tradition, and also does a lot of collaboration with ACM musicians and other African-American musicians. So it's like community building. Like, he's really about that, and he's a really great role model in terms of what you do as a musician. And then I have Avery Young on vocals and spoken word, who's a poet who really knows how to use his voice. He writes his own poetry. He has his own band in Chicago, which most of the musicians I play with are all band leaders and composers. He's using my text for my piece, but he uses it with full heart as if it's coming from him. And then Tamika on cello and Renee Baker on violin. And Alex Wing is a real star on the album, playing electric guitar.
Wow.
Theremin.
Oh.
and oud.
Okay.
And Jovia Armstrong on percussion, and she has a really unique setup that is not drum set, but includes cymbals. So I've kind of asked her to develop this really unique setup that's kind of a softer sound. So the snare drum is just so related to war and battle, and, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, she's using other instruments in addition to cymbals for her setup.
Yeah. So is she more percussive?
She's using regular instruments, but just not like in a way that a trap drum set is. It's not really a traditional trap drum setup.
Okay. So what
you know,
using?
I'm not a drummer, so
okay.
I have trouble explaining.
Okay. Got it. See, what will have to happen is we just have to come and see. When you come to our town and present the piece, then we can see for ourselves what the makeup of this drum assemblage is.
Yeah.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. What you're listening to right now is Ego's War from Nicole Mitchell, our guest for this evening. Her latest recording, which will be released in May of this year, Mandalora Awakening 2, Emerging Worlds. This is on FPE Records. Before that, we heard Arch of O, Part 4, Nicole Mitchell, and Anarchy New Music Ensemble. The name of the release is Archivo. This is a 2012 Rogart release. Before that, we heard Towards Excellence from Nicole Mitchell's Black Earth Ensemble and Ensemble Labyrinthus. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that one correctly. Moments of Fatherhood. This is a 2016 Rogart release. We still have a little more to hear from Nicole Mitchell. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
I can give you the drum setup.
Oh.
Cajon with a hi-hat stand.
Okay.
And then cymbals and floor tom. Uh-huh. That's basically it.
Okay.
And then she might, on the side, she might have bongos or she might have congas depending on the situation.
Okay.
But yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for finding that. That was really cool of you.
Since you were a drummer, you could appreciate that.
I can indeed. So there were three recordings, Black Earth Ensemble recordings, as a matter of fact. You released Vision Quest, Africa Rising, and Hope, Future, and Destiny. Were on a label that you had run with David Boynkin, the saxophonist that mm-hmm. you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Is Dreamtime Records still in existence, or is it?
No.
Time? Okay.
It was my first attempt of putting out my own music. And I definitely learned a lot. But then I took on the idea that I should be a little bit more generous and work with other independent labels. And that'll also help for more people to know about my music. So I started playing with Delmark Records.
Yeah.
And I think I was the first woman instrumentalist in 55 years.
That's what I read. It's like another first woman situation.
Yeah.
It's funny how we're having this discussion during Women's History Month. So, this is pretty cool. Well, you're with, I guess, what's considered an independent label where they are, Rogart.
Yes, but in the new album, Mandrell Awakening, is on FPE, and that stands for For Practically Everyone, which is a new label in Chicago. And I'm having a lot of fun with them. I think they really invest in their artists. They really believe in their artists. And they make sure that everything about what's done is from the voice of the artist, even more than other labels. And I really appreciate that about them. So I definitely will probably do more in the future with them. All the way down to the artwork, you know. So when you see the artwork for Mandrell Awakening, you'll feel like, okay, this is where she's coming from. Where other labels like Rogue Art has a, you know, a uniform CD. Every CD looks exactly the
same.
This
is true. The only thing that changes is the text.
Delmark forces you to have a picture of you playing your instrument, and you know, it's like, really? I mean, I love Delmark, but that's one thing that I've always rebelled against.
Interesting. As a matter of fact, I went to the FPE site, FPERECS.com, and I'm looking at your cover, Mandrell. Awakening to Emerging Worlds. It's a very interesting cover. I'm looking at this lady. She doesn't look anything
like
you.
It's by Damon Locke. Damon Locke did the artwork, and he has a thing about not using the artist in the seams of the art, but to use faces that express the mood of what the music is.
Oh, interesting.
So, for example, Tamika Reed's new album, he did the artwork for her album, and people might think that's Tamika on that cover, but it's not.
Okay. Well, I know this is definitely not you on your cover.
No, it's not me.
Not one of those faces on there is yours. But I do like the artwork. It looks like planets and lovely lines and dots and faces and colorings. And It's an interesting cover.
Yeah.
So how did you wind up going with that person? Was he just assigned
to you? Oh, Dan Lex is, no, not at all. I chose him. Oh. We've been friends and artistic collaborators for years.
Okay.
But in other contexts, like we both perform with Rob Mazurek's Exploding Star Orchestra. And a lot of times if I'm working on something, say like poetry or prose or something, I like try to get his feedback, or if he's making some artwork, he might send it to me for feedback or something like that. So kind of like we're brother and sister.
Oh, cool. Earlier, well, I sort of mentioned by name Xenogenesis, but Octavia Butler, the Xenogenesis suite, you had done with a Black Earth Ensemble in 2008. And I noticed some of your writings tend to go toward Afrofuturism. Is that something that is of interest to you? I understand your mother liked Octavia Butler.
Tell me something. Thanks for doing all that research. That's definitely true. And that was how I was introduced to the work of Octavia Butler. It's been interesting here living in California, because I'm teaching here at UC Irvine in the Integrated Composition, Improvisation, and Technology program, which is a whole mouthful.
For real.
Of basically saying a music PhD program, which incorporates improvisation and composition. But her archive is at the Huntington, which is a private library near Pasadena. And so there was an organization called Clock Shop that actually did a really amazing tribute to her between 2016 and 2017. They did all these events around Octavia Butler, and they brought in writers, they brought in poets, they brought in visual artists, and they even invited me to do my two suites that I wrote for her, because I had a second suite on FPE Records called Intergalactic Theme.
Okay.
And so we performed it in the fall here in L.A., And it was just so amazing to have the opportunity to also visit her archive and her words and literally meet her words that she physically wrote.
Wow.
Actually, we're working on a third project, but this time I'm going to collaborate with vocalist and composer Lisa Harris.
Oh.
And so it'll be a little bit different. It probably won't be called Xenogenesis because it's kind of a different concept, but it'll also be inspired by Octavia Butler.
Oh, okay. I've actually wanted to ask you this because you primarily seem to have done a lot of your projects with the Black Earth Ensemble. Is that something that is disbanded or you'll be revisiting it? Or?
No.
Okay.
I mean, that's my main... I founded Black Earth Ensemble in 1998, and I've just come to the realization that in 2018, it's going to be our 20th anniversary.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
So I need to come up with some events to celebrate that. But yeah, we actually will be performing in Chicago in April, on April 8th, for the Gwendolyn Brooks Centennial.
Wow.
So I'm going to be premiering a new work celebrating Gwendolyn Brooks and featuring some of her poems read by poet. So I'm working on that music now. And also recently, I just recorded with Black Earth Ensemble a new project featuring distinguished poet Haki R. Madhubuti, who
was
formerly Don Lee.
Yes!
Because it's going to be the 50th anniversary of Third World Press.
Oh, yes!
So we're putting out a CD. We've already recorded most of the music where he's reading his poems from Liberation Narrative.
Nice!
With my music, and I'm really excited about this because Haki's been a great mentor. I'm so proud of him. He just reached his 75th birthday.
Yay!
And he's a big part of my own artistic and cultural development. I worked for Third World Press for 13 years.
Oh, wow. That is wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, sweat.
Yeah. So that was really where I got a lot of my education. He calls himself my cultural father. So I think that's really a fitting title. And so this will be my gift, will be this project that will be put on his catalog for Third World Press for the 50th anniversary.
I saw a really nice picture of the two of you on your Facebook page. That was
Yeah. I look like a little kid.
Well, he's so tall. Everybody looks like a little kid.
Right.
But you are definitely a happy little kid. I can see it on your face. It will be by next year.
So that'll be released at the end of September this year.
Wonderful. Looking forward to that then. Your birthday was last month, as a matter of fact.
I just turned 50.
Yay!
I'll cut you to the chase.
Well, I wasn't going to give any digits, but what I was going to say was, you know, I was going to acknowledge that your birthday has passed, but that you were born, I see, in Syracuse.
That's right.
How did you wind up in Chicago?
Well, actually, my mother was born and raised in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my mother's from the south side of Chicago.
Okay.
And so I actually spent a lot of time in Chicago growing up. Even if I lived in Syracuse, I would go to Chicago in the summer.
Uh-huh.
I would spend months in the summer and also Christmas holidays. Mm-hmm. We would go to Chicago. So, yeah, we left Syracuse and moved to Southern California, to Orange County, actually, to Anaheim. And I had a very traumatic childhood in Anaheim. So Chicago was my saving grace.
Okay.
And so between my mother dying when I was 16 and having a traumatic childhood in Orange County, Chicago was the answer. Yeah, so that's how I ended up in Chicago.
Oh, it's wonderful. That's wonderful that you were there. I mean, it's unfortunate how you wound up there, but it is indeed a wonderful thing that you wound up in Chicago. It seemed to have been really great for you.
Yeah, it's still home to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out here for 6 years. My husband and I have been out here, and it's kind of chilly. People talk about physical weather. We're talking about
vibe,
you know, psychological weather.
Yeah.
It's kind of chilly here, you know, for Black folks, to be honest.
And so you go home still every now and then.
Yeah.
Excellent. Do you have anyone still in Syracuse, by the way?
No, I don't. I do have a few of my mother's friends are still there.
Okay.
When we were there, I actually went back 2 years ago for the first time. And it was really amazing because I had the opportunity to perform at the Folk Art Gallery of Syracuse, which at the time we lived there in the late 60s and early 70s was called the Black Folk Art Gallery. And it was a new gallery that had just opened by a black professor at Syracuse University, Herb Williams. And my mother was actually in the first cohort of the collective that really got it up and running.
Oh, wow.
And so this was a really exciting moment. Probably the most exciting moment of her life was being a part of that community with the gallery and the artistic support and the encouragement and the opportunities for her to show her work as a visual artist. And that vibration of the Black Folk Art Gallery, I remember very clearly as a child. And so I really think it connected me when I moved to Chicago. That's how I ended up as a member of the ACM.
Yeah.
Because it was a similar vibration, you know.
Mm-hmm. I can hear that. You mentioned on your site you have some teachers and mentors listed. Well, I want to focus on them all, but there's so many. I guess what stands out for me is you do recognize George Lewis as one.
Definitely. George Lewis definitely has been a really great mentor. I remember the moment I met him, which was walking down Martin Luther King Drive, and he approached me to interview me for his ACM book, which now, of course, is the defining work of the history of the ACM,
right.
Power Stronger Than Itself.
Right, right.
But since then, he's been a really amazing mentor in terms of over the years giving me guidance and direction, not only on my creative work, but also how to navigate as an artist. I think it's really important when people are emerging as artists to have someone that they can talk to that help them to navigate some of these complex situations with business. It's kind of navigating, when I said complex situations, probably the easiest way to say it, but sometimes it has to do with business, sometimes it has to do with communication with other people you're working with and how to solve problems, how to solve organizational problems, like if you're working with a team, you know, all of these things, they're part of music, but they also help you to navigate life and they help you to navigate whatever endeavor that you're trying to develop. This idea of building something, that's why like institution builders like Hakeem Adebuti, like the founders of the ACM, they are so important because we don't really learn this in school.
No.
Like school teaches you how to critique and how to break things down, not how to build.
Right.
So it's so important.
True. Oh, yeah. We start off the program with Faye Victor reading a piece that she was inspired to write as a result of talking about navigating things. The subject of sexism has come up recently in the news based on an interview that somebody had conducted with another musician. I noticed that you do negotiate. You seem to negotiate rather well with your ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
How is that for you? Does it matter as a woman, or is it just as a band leader that's what you do?
No, I think it does matter.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when you're starting out as an artist, I feel I was like a late bloomer. And I think for women, this happens often that we're late bloomers. And part of that has to do with having to have the tools and to gain the confidence to be able to do the things that we really envision wanting to do and to allowing ourselves that we deserve and that we're qualified to do those things. It took me a long time. When I look back, I didn't put out my first record till 2001. I mean, it hasn't been that long, actually. It feels like it's been a long time, but it hasn't been that long that I've been out there recording. And I could have been doing that in 1991. If I was a male or if I was more confident, I could have been doing the same thing 10 years before that, but I wasn't in a place where I felt comfortable. And developing the confidence is really important. And when I see high school bands, they're 50% girls.
Wow.
Whether it's a black school, a white school, whatever it is, it's 50% for the most part on all those instruments. And something happens when people go to college, the girls drop out. They don't continue at a really low rate. And I think it's because while they're in that experience, they're not being encouraged enough to believe that they could move forward as a musician. I think that's part of the problem. But for me personally, it took a lot of time. And I spent 7 years in Samana, which was the all-women ensemble that we started out talking with in the beginning with mm-hmm. Maya and Shanta. Mm-hmm. Other members were Aquila Sadala and Coco Alyssis. And it took 7 years. I was in that group before I even played with any other group. And I think that I had to develop that sense of self and that sense of strength in order to move to the next level where I could be telling other musicians, this is what I want.
Right.
But then when you get to the level of where I am now, it's like, okay, I don't have problems working with other musicians. You know, it doesn't matter if they're men or women or whatever it is. When I create a project, I try to, in a lot of situations with Black Earth Ensemble, half of the band will be women or even more than half will be women. And especially making space for Black women because there's something special there that isn't heard. But at the same time, I still have challenges. I mean, I have challenges there, but I still continue to have challenges negotiating on the business aspects of things, you know, where
right.
there's assumptions that maybe venue owners have. They assume an undervalue of who you are because you're a Black woman, or that maybe they assume that you undervalue yourself and that they can get away with undervaluing you because you don't know what you're worth, you know. So this continues in other, as you evolve as an artist, there's other challenges that continue, and then the woman issue comes up again. Once you overcome one aspect of it, there's other aspects where I've, okay, if I was so-and-so man at the same artistic level that I'm at with the same experience and the same age and kind of playing in the same field in terms of the stylistic approaches or similarities, or seeing somebody else not having the same barriers or obstacles. So it's real. It's definitely real. And it gets more sophisticated, like, as you keep going. It doesn't disappear. It just gets more sophisticated. And then you have to continue to get more sophisticated to address it and to navigate it.
Well, I noticed musically, though, that you play well with others and as you solo.
That was said very nicely.
Yes.
Play well with others.
And as you solo, you, well... You do solo, as most instrumentalists.
Listening. You,
exactly, exactly. You're a great listener. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It sounds as though you listen well, that you are attentive to what is happening. I'm not saying this the way I want to. I guess I appreciate hearing you're doing that. It's what all musicians do. You're doing it too, but I really appreciate you're doing it with your own music. In most of these programs, I tend to play the work that people do as a side person. And in this program, it's just your music. It's just your composition. You're the sole focus musically during this program.
Wow, thank you.
I just got to say that. Because you have a lot of projects that you're working on. Or have worked on and are developing. And we get to see you on March 29th, Wednesday, March 29th, at National Sawdust in another project. 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Excellent. Stone Commissioning Series, your piece, Maroon Cloud, with Aruan Ortiz on piano, Faye Victor, vocalist, Tamika Reed, cello, and you playing flutes, your compositions, and electronics. So we'll get to see and hear that live, and I am so looking forward to hearing more of your work.
Thank you. I really appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Is there anything else you want to share before we get off?
Oh, sure. I guess I'll share that I have another, I'm really excited about this other project that I'm going to be doing in the fall, and that is I've done some collaborations with some musicians from Bamako, Mali.
Oh, wow.
Bolaki Sissoko plays Kora, Babani Kone on vocals, and Basiri Diabete on Balafone.
Wow.
And we did a project in 2014, 2015 in France, but we didn't have the opportunity to bring it to this country. And I've been working really hard to get this together, and I've been lucky to partner with the Hyde Park Jazz Festival in Chicago and the World Music Festival, which is actually going to happen this fall. They're going to be coming to Chicago, and we're going to be further developing this collaboration between Black Earth Ensemble and Balake and his friends, but also I'm really excited to share them in workshops with the Chicago Public Schools. So young people on the south and west side of Chicago are going to have the opportunity to meet these artists and to hear them play, which I'm sure they've never heard in their life, and hopefully will make a positive impact on their lives. And so I'm excited about that, and also workshops for Chicago musicians for learning the approaches that they have to playing music. So that's going to be happening in the fall, and just one of those dreams that's actually coming true.
Wow. So when is that exactly? Do you have dates?
Yes. The performance at the World Music Fest, it's September 23rd, which is an overlap between the Hyde Park Jazz Festival and the Chicago World Music Fest. A double festival performance.
Ah, excellent. And you will have this information on your website at NicoleMitchell.com, yes?
Yeah, very soon.
But it is NicoleMitchell.com. NicoleMitchell.com.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nicole Mitchell. I really appreciate all the time that you spent with us. I'm
so
grateful to have had this discussion. We look forward to seeing you on Wednesday the 29th here in New York.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, shout out to my husband, Calvin Gant.
All right, then.
Okay.
All right. Have a good night.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. What you're listening to right now is the Uli Moves from Nicole Mitchell's Black Earth Ensemble, her release Intergalactic Beings. This was a 2014 FPE Records release. Many thanks to Faye Victor, who provided her recitation at the beginning of the program. And continue thanks to Nicole Mitchell. Sugar in My Bowl will be back on April 2nd with our guest, baritone saxophonist, band leader, composer, educator, Claire Daly. La Nueva Alternativa is coming up next, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.